TV Talk Machine, episode 47. We're back. Tim is back at home. Welcome home, sir. Tim Goodman, Hollywood reporter. You're back. You're at home. You're in Northern California now. Hi.
Hi. Can you believe it?
No, it's been so long. So much has changed since you were last there.
So much is there. So much has changed. I can't. Yeah. I have no brain. I left it there. I didn't pack it.
No.
There's that. I left
Your
it
brain
there.
Is still in residence at the Beverly Hills. It's in a lost and found.
I think my brain is under the bed there somewhere.
Could be.
And none of the maids have found it yet.
No. They will eventually. It'll be dusty. You'll get it back.
No, it's dusty.
You're just putting your life back together and probably having to watch more shows, huh?
Yeah, strangely that's what's happening. I'm putting the life back together. The whole idea of like not getting turned down service and driving a car, which was different.
Oh, yeah, you know? Sure.
Uh-huh. Those little things get back in the groove.
When you live in a hotel, you don't need to drive a car.
No, don't need to carry a wallet. Lots of things. It's really interesting.
Just your room key.
This is my room key.
What do you need?
And everything's taken care of.
Yeah.
Just type like a monkey.
Yeah.
Go, monkey, go.
Yeah. But now you're back.
I'm back now, so it's all good.
Back in humanity.
Mm-hmm.
So we have let, for the last 3 weeks, we've let the feedback from the listeners pile up.
We did. We let it slip because of events.
I've got a big chunk of it here, but I thought I would ask you first. Anything else going on? Anything we should know? I did notice an amusing story that I wanted to bring up about the fact that apparently the stars of The Good Wife hate each other so much that they had to be CGI'd into a scene together in order to appear together. Is that true?
That is true. Yes.
Oh my God.
Uh huh. And
Juliana Margulies and Archie Punjabi do just refuse to be like, even their bosses can't come to them and say like, hey, we're paying you a lot of money to be on a TV show. Perhaps you can suck it up and be in a scene a year. Nope.
Nope. And they had to write. And because of that, it's long standing because of that. They also had to rewrite scenes they normally would have been able to write. Like, well, we can't write that scene because they can't be in the same room with each other, or they can't communicate with each other. It's like really bad. And so they had to during one of the final episodes, they had to CGI them together at a bar talking.
God.
It's the biggest ripoff. It cheated the fans, and the producers won't admit it because if they admit it, they have to say, these two don't like each other and there's not a damn thing that we can do about it. And Margulies is a producer on the show, so she got her way and she won.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think I sent you an email the other day. There's, you know, the bosses, can't the bosses tell them what to do? And I think the answer is, well, obviously Juliana Margulies is the boss.
Yes, she's the boss now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she's proven that. And so it's like, and now they're coming out trying to, it just puts those two, the kings who created the series, it puts them in a really bad spot. But you know what? That was a monster of their own making.
In the old days, they would just, you know, ditch one of the actors. But it sounds like Archie Punjabi got an award nomination or won an Emmy.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I think she's been a regular, it's not a show that's my favorite show, as you know, so I go back, but she's been nominated a number of times. I think she did win, actually.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
Yeah. So I wonder if some of it is they don't want to get rid of her because she won those awards, but under normal circumstances, you got the star who's one of the producers and can't stand to be with this other actor, you would just get rid of them. But they instead have played this weird contortion game to keep them around but not touching. It's weird.
It is very odd. They normally somebody would have been written out, but they weren't. And then it came to that. Yeah, TV's a weird business, man. It's weird.
CGI, we'll have a drink later. Well, actually, I despise you. We'll have a CGI drink later.
We'll have a CGI drink. And we'll look to our right and you look to your left. And it'll look like we're looking in each other's eyes because we are at a bar together.
But there'll be doubles.
But they will be. You will be looking at somebody else, and we will CG. We'll make it all. We'll fix it in post, as they always say. Fix it in post. Yeah,
that's just crazy. That's just a crazy story.
Crazy.
Anything else going on that struck you in the TV world since last we spoke?
Let's see, in the TV world, no. I mean, the last thing is my, let's see what's happened. My Narcos review is live.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. That's up and running. That's on Netflix, so that's up and running. And I think I reiterated, it's already started now. I reposted my Show Me a Hero review for HBO and, of course, Fear the Walking Dead. And those, we wrote those so far in advance, even I can't remember what I said.
How's Narcos?
It's really good. It's as I said in the review, there's tons of stuff out there about Pablo Escobar, which this is about drug kingpin, Colombian drug kingpin Pablo Escobar. It's tons of movies, tons of documentaries, a lot of stuff. But this is different because it's an ongoing dramatic series. And because it has more time, 10 hours in the first episode, and I really believe there will be a second episode, they are able to sort of take this granular story and then widen it out. And so instead of just like the rise and fall of Pablo, it's like all the people around him, what happened, what was going on, a bigger story about how he, you know, did good and bad things for Colombia. You know, he had a lot of money to throw at people, but then also did clearly a lot of evil stuff, since he was, I think somebody had said in the story that he was like, he really became like narco terrorism number one. So he really sort of created it. So, but it's an interesting story. It's interesting, and it drops August 28th on Netflix, so you can just binge it.
All right.
Binge it like cocaine.
I really like cocaine, sure. Will that be the ad?
That's probably the ad
for Netflix. Sure. Yeah. Just for Netflix in general, not just for Narcos.
Snort up these 10 episodes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
We're coming up. This is episode 47, so we're coming up on having done this for a year now. And I realize this because I realize the wheel has turned. And pretty soon we're going to have to start talking about when things premiere in the fall, the traditional fall TV season, which means that you've got, like, you must just be completely inundated with stuff that's or is starting to come in for the fall, right?
Yeah, and of course, though, yeah, tons of it has already come in, excuse me, and I've looked at it at TCA and when I've come back from TCA, and I always laugh because I always put one in the win column for me when I say, you know what? I'm not going to watch this one, but I'll just see the screener at TCA, and then I'll look at the panel, and we'll judge. And then they come out, and they say, you know what? Yeah, we're going to reshoot the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
Like, victory is mine.
That's right. Don't watch a pilot too early, because they may recast. Yep. They may.
A number of times that's already happened, and I would always laugh when they'd say, well, when you see the next version we send out, the new pilot, and I always start laughing. They're like, you know, we just did away with the sister and the grandma. Yeah. And yeah. Okay, great. I'm glad I didn't see it.
So after we talked last week, you wrote a piece that was just a great piece about it was your Nobody Escapes Unscathed. No one here gets out alive.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, it's the cranky saying goodbye, putting on the cranky pants, saying goodbye to the TCA after this time. Mm-hmm. But it's like things you've learned. Like here's some truth, some tough love, some hard truths about the TV world. And one of the things that struck me in it, I mean, there's a lot of great stuff in there. One of the things that struck me in it, talking about pilots, is this idea that you just don't, like, there are no second chances.
Mm-mm.
Like, you know, if you can't, so if you do a pilot and you think, well, I think I want this to go to series as a network executive, but the pilot's not really that strong, I don't think you can responsibly say we're going to just run the pilot as it is and then figure it out as we go. I feel like... You know, if you can't come out with your best material on week one, people aren't going to watch number two.
Yeah, they are not, and you would be surprised how resistant to that idea is people are, and not just like resistant, like, oh, I don't want to do it like that. It's like people, I am not kidding you, people who run networks and cable channels are still talking to me, and saying, you really think that's true? Yeah. I'm like, yes, I do, more than ever. Since we're going to hit the 400 mark of new scripted series, I really think that's true in 2015, that you can't do that. And it's like not – and I always tell them, it's not that I think that this is true. This is true. People – you don't watch TV like normal people do, and that is a real downside. In fact, I got caught up into a lot of conversations with other critics, and at one point I was like, guys, we can argue this as critics, how we watch it. We're not normal. We are not normal in so many ways, but we're not normal in how we watch a show. You have somebody in the Gen Pop who's going to, you know, you just say, oh, watch this show from NBC at such and such an hour. And if you're lucky enough to catch their attention, via a clip or something, or they saw it on the previewed on a show that they liked, and then they found it and they remembered it, and they just so happen to be in front of the TV the day your stuff comes on. I guarantee you, if it doesn't hook them, not only will they not finish watching it, they'll be like, eh, yeah, I hated that, or that was dumb. And they're never going to go back for the second episode. It's they can't understand that in the business. It is mind-boggling.
And if they do like it, and they saw it on a Wednesday night, they'll be completely baffled when the next Wednesday they discover that, oh, the next episode aired on Monday.
Yeah, yeah. And to me,
that's great.
Yeah. And it's funny that you picked that, because that literally it is like, I think, 1A and 1B of the things that I am so surprised that they still want to do. Because I had people who read this who were in scheduling, and they were like, yeah, we don't believe that. We can get those eyeballs back on a different day and a different time. And I'm like, well, Godspeed.
Yeah.
Good luck with that, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if you also are rerunning it on Saturday nights or something like that. But I can't tell you how many times I've and I'm tuned in enough that I am the co-host of a podcast about television. and I'll be like, oh, it was on Tuesday? But yeah. Wasn't it on last Thursday? Oh, I missed episode two. And unless episode two is somehow magically airing again on Saturday night or on a cable channel or something, I'll be like, oh, well, maybe I'll catch it when it's on Netflix next year.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I missed it.
Do. Yeah, and they know that they have that fallback net. And the even greater fallback net is, you know what? It could get canceled, and I won't have invested any time. So once your fully complete season is done, I'll catch up on Hulu. I did have people say, again, you know, this is the great part about being down there is talking to these people one-on-one or sitting, you know, out just outside of the session and shooting the shit and then hear them say stuff that you're kind of wow about. And I included one of those, which was people saying, oh, well, here's how your theory doesn't work. And by the way, people who can do something about it, that's that level,
yeah.
Who said, hey, you know what, I get what you're saying, but here's why your theory doesn't work, right? We're the DVR age. We already take into consideration the shifted time and that, you know, they won't watch it live, but we'll catch them on, you know, 72 hours later. And I was like, yeah, you know, that's only true on established shows that they decided that they would like. That is not true for the first time ever. No one really DVRs something. If they want to sample, you know, like if you say, hey, Fargo season two is coming out, sure, people are going to, if they've seen season one, they're going to DVR that. But if you say, oh, hey, there's this show that's kind of getting a little bit of buzz, it's called Blind Spot on NBC, it looks kind of cool, that person does not run home and DVR Blind Spot. They don't. They actually will, maybe if they remember, they'll watch it. And then if they like it, then they'll decide to DVR it, put it on their season pass, but not right away. So that's a flaw in their system. So I'm like, God, you guys really got to like go live in somebody else's house and like sit with a family. Go out and sit with a family who actually watches TV. You'd probably like lose your lunch. You'd be so stunned.
But the ninth episode is going to be the best one yet. So just if you can grind through the first 8 weeks,
it really gets better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. That's still happening.
So anything else before we go to the listeners? Anything else you want to bring up?
I do not think so. I think people should probably watch Fear of the Walking Dead, if you already watch it, you're probably going to watch it anyway. You don't need a reminder on that one. All right. We're good to go.
Okay, let's go to it. We have Jake on Twitter said, Heroes Reborn, are they taking the advice of extra content with a web series? It looks like maybe it's a thing. Says Jake,
it's Chinatown, Jake. Yeah, they have a lot of lessons to be learned from Heroes. It wasn't the greatest panel there, and you know what? I don't remember if that is true. I think they have some stuff built up for behind the scenes. You can see it like online right now. But during the session when they talked about, you know, Heroes and basically the first question I wanted to ask: why are you being reborn? Like, why? I mean, the first
what
season
caused
was pretty,
this to happen?
Yeah, first season was pretty great, and then you didn't really know what you were doing after that. So they're in this mode of they kind of want to make it like serialized anthology series almost. So you have some of the, I think there's a couple of regulars who've come back. There are some surprise cameos, but this cast that's in it now may not be the cast, and probably unlikely to be the entire cast in the next season if it's re-upped again.
Yeah, apparently, according to the PR, Heroes Reborn will be preceded by a digital series that will introduce audiences to the new characters. So they're doing some webisodes, basically.
Okay, well, that's good. Yeah. And that's not cutting edge, but that's good to know. Well, I mean, webisodes have been around for like 10 years, but yeah.
Yeah, but it's good. I mean, yeah. Usually it's to bridge an existing thing. I think they're, well, I guess they are sort of bridging here. It's like, hey, remember Heroes? It's going to come back, so you should watch.
Yeah. The thing that's interesting about that, too, by the way, just for talking TV out loud like we do here, is A, you have to be interested in the original Heroes. And maybe you're not. Maybe you're just like, okay, never heard of Heroes, but okay, here's a Heroes Reborn, and I don't have to invest that much time into it. You know, maybe you'll go and click on those webisodes, but I hate to hit everybody over the head about this, but time is the thing. So who has time to go and watch a bunch of pre-webisodes just so you can get the pre-backstory? I think that's few and far between who'll do that.
Yep.
I think there's going to be more people saying, oh my God, no one will shut up about Mr. Robot, so I better go watch those episodes first. There's all your time spent.
Yeah. Related to Heroes Reborn, this is from Scott in the 615.
Mm-hmm.
Tim, do networks get, or I guess networks or studios, get streaming numbers from Netflix? Because I'm trying to find a plausible explanation for Heroes Reborn. But I thought that's an interesting question, is do the studios or the networks get some hints from Netflix? Is there communication there about what shows are doing well on Netflix?
Yes, there is. They're not going to give them access to the proprietary numbers because Netflix has its own mysterious algorithm, which should be its own series basically on how Netflix knows whether something's popular or not. But they do share... enough. If they become partners with somebody, they would say, look, hey, you know, the original's doing gangbusters for us, and enough so that we would help invest, or we would be interested in a second season, and then that would help us. So those things exist. I mean, NBC is still a partner on Kimmy Schmidt, even though they sold it to them, is still apparently part owner. So they kind of want to know how Kimmy Schmidt is doing for whatever reasons. But yeah, I don't think they're going to get like lay out a piece of paper with all the numbers on it and say these numbers here and circle them in red and say this you should renew or you should restart. But they do say these shows do really well, and it might be an audience you don't know you have yet. So maybe you can reboot something based on the fact that we are getting so many people watching this.
That seems to be there was a story that we talked about briefly about. Will they bring back Star Trek as a TV series? And one of the pieces of data there was that by all accounts from Netflix, the Star Trek streams do really well. So I'm saying there's current interest in this property, perhaps, you know, that you could parlay that into a show. Scott went on to say, speaking of old shows being revived, he says Prison Break is coming back. Is this just networks catching a fever after announcements for the return of Twin Peaks and The X-Files?
Yes, this is insanity, by the way. So
Full House, too, by the way.
Full House. This is where that idea goes crazy. And I think that, this is actually a great question because everything would point in this direction. Like, well, look at all these people we have for Star Trek, and this will be a hit. But I think what some of the networks, not the ones who were saying yes, 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 but the ones who are like, yeah, that's dubious to me, what they're saying is, yeah, it's great that you have a completed, entirely finished series for somebody to go watch on Netflix. That's not how they will watch the reboot or the next season on my channel, you know, my network. They're going to say, they don't know if I'm going to cancel it or not. I'm adding myself in there. Like, people watch Netflix and rewatch all the stuff on Netflix because it's done. And there's no, you can't get canceled in the middle. They have access to everything and they have it right now. Now you're going to say, let's go watch now that you like that. Here's the other one on the linear version that you have to watch Wednesday at 8 every week. I'm not so sure the viewing experience is the same way, which would mean that it won't equal the same numbers. So it's a little apples and oranges for me.
Right.
Huh. But yeah, honestly, Prison Break, it totally dominated the – and I actually talked to the Fox – the presidents and execs after that, and they were like, yeah, kind of didn't think it was going to become a very heavy Prison Break session. They were really prepared. They were prepped for a lot of questions, but they were not prepped for getting like 15 Prison Break questions, which I think they found completely odd. But yeah, it's a limited series kind of thing. I don't know. I can't even imagine why that series is the one coming back. No idea.
Yeah, that's very strange. Sarah with love from the 317.
Yay,
it's
Sarah.
Indiana.
Yeah.
Saw your TCA tweet regarding Twin Peaks. What are your worries now that you know more?
We didn't see anything. I'm worried about Twin Peaks only because I saw the X-Files footage and that made me really worried about it.
Yeah. And there was that. So it sounded like that X-Files footage was really just kind of, boring and awful.
It, to me, like if I had to be pressed, and we've actually kind of done these kind of stories, but at THR, like best panel and best thing you took out of it and worst thing you took out of it. Honest to me, to God, I think the takeaway for me at this TH, the thing that I'll never forget, other than like I saw these great, lots of great teasers that I'm interested in for shows that are coming up in 2016, I can't unsee the X-Files footage and how bad it was.
Wow.
And thinking, oh my God, that's not something you can reshoot because now there's six episodes in it.
Right.
So like if that's the style... If that's the acting style and if that's the feel of the show, it's probably too late. The only thing I can say is maybe, you know, the early episodes or whatever are really great. And then you hit this patch where you're like, this is a little too on point for me. But again, it felt like a parody and everybody in the room thought it felt like a parody. So I was not I'm not the only person. People were writing as it happened, this is a joke, right? This is like on Twitter, like hundreds of critics were like, this can't be real, right? This is a parody. And like, and a lot of like people who weren't even texting or weren't even tweeting because their jaws were dropping. And I was looking at the thing like, okay, he's going to turn to the camera and say, you know, we're back. But no, he didn't. And so, yeah, I think that the next logical, Sarah, the next logical worry is Twin Peaks, because I mean, let's be honest, I want it too, and I think David Lynch is genius, and I want Twin Peaks too, but let's remember that season two was a disaster. So there's precedent for this thing going really awry. And here's where the other red flags came up, Jason, is that the people at Showtime were like, yeah, we might get it in 2015, or we might get it in 2016, I don't know. There's really no timetable on when to wedge this thing in, which makes me think, how much of this is written? Have they started? They haven't started. So, like, when will they start? And will they hit a problem? Will they hit a snag? I don't know. It looks very – I would put a gigantic question mark next to Twin Peaks for sure.
All right. So don't count your chickens with your reboots, your relaunches, your revivals.
Be careful what you wish for as well.
Yikes. That's scary. Eric on Facebook – no error code. Sorry, Eric. Said Facebook is this error code. Took your advice and binged on Rectify.
Ooh.
Just finished the Source episode and now gagging for fourth season. Thanks a lot, Tim. Now I want all my dramas to be this lyrical, heartbreaking, and well-written. The whole cast is superb. Aidan Young as Daniel is the standout. His throwaway lines are the best. The plot seemed secondary in the first two seasons, but now the fourth season is necessary. I hold you responsible for this devotion. I hope you can live with yourself.
Well, that's nice. I can do that. I can live with myself. It's great. Yeah, I love those guys. I love that show. It's very exciting. Fourth season, maybe it's last. Who knows? That could still go on. But yeah, it's... It's funny when he said binge watch. That's not really a show that's easy to binge watch. It's a pretty slow mover. I mean, everything's great about it, but I guess if you kind of really get into that, and it's also kind of depressing. First season, binge watching that. Woo! Hope you did it during the day so you could take a sunny walk afterwards. Wow.
Dan from the 02, that's Sydney, Australia.
Nice. Our good friends in Australia.
Yeah, worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
Simultaneous release. Just put that out there.
Yeah.
Says two things. One, regarding Tim's concerns about almost certain death if he ever visits Australia.
Yes.
The trick is to simply not get up off the couch. I'm 35 years in with this technique, and it has served me rather well.
Okay, I love this guy already. Awesome.
Number two, I don't understand HBO's strategy with HBO Now and how it aligns with Cinemax. If HBO is so desperate to fill HBO Now with compelling content, why did they not lean on their Cinemax content? It's not as though Cinemax will be strong enough to sustain its own streaming service eventually. So what's stopping them from making The Nick or Banshee available?
This is a good point. I think they just... I think they just started a new kind of like one-stop shop called At The Nick. I think you can actually, in lieu, or not in lieu of, but in getting prepped for season two, which is coming soon, you can watch, I think, all of the Nick on HBO Go right now, or HBO Now. One of those two. It's available. I think they just sent out the announcement a day ago.
So it's using the HBO platform to kind of promote the Cinemax shows.
Yeah, and they should. I mean, I think... Well, here's what should give everybody a pause. I mean, I totally I love the Nick, and I totally forgot about it during all the Emmy discussions. I feel really bad about that, actually. But I think that was also a wake up call to HBO, where they thought that it would translate, and people were just like, Cinemax. Maybe I didn't see it on Cinemax. So, yeah, I'll be really the strategy now going forward is either going to be we need to put 5 or 6 more really strong shows on Cinemax, or we shouldn't.
You
know,
right.
Or we should just make Cinemax like, because, you know, I mean, I don't know if you remember, we talked about this ages ago. I don't even know what number it was, but Soderbergh wanted to be the person who broke Cinemax out of the sort of the action movie ghetto, and he wanted to be like The Sopranos for HBO. He wanted The Nick to be that for Cinemax. And again, be careful what you wish for, because I think he's realizing now that, you know, not a lot of people saw it. And it doesn't get the same kind of promotion, and it's easy to forget. So I don't know. I think if I was HBO going forward, I might move the Nick over to HBO. Yeah. And that's the thing. I don't even know. This is a question I should be asking myself. Hey Tim, first time caller. You know, like I wonder. Tim in the 510. I wonder if you if HBO has ever shown the Nick on HBO property.
I don't know.
Seems like something they should do.
Yeah, right. You'd think. Yeah, well, I mean, obviously they want to establish Cinemax as a whole other tier of you know, another brand that now they have two products to sell.
Right.
The danger is that what they're doing is they're not going to be able to make it, and they've watered down their development that maybe could have gone somewhere
true.
Else.
Mm-hmm. True. And they want those transmission fees and all that stuff, the cable money. So.
That money. Aaron from the 330. That's Ohio.
Way to go, Ohio.
We really release simultaneously worldwide.
Even in Ohio.
I've been listening for several months now. We've had a lot in common, but you've also introduced me to some things I probably would never have tried. For example, I just binged on all of Orphan Black this past week.
Nice.
Just finished season 3, episode 10 a few minutes ago. I probably would never have tried Mr. Robot because of the USA Network stigma.
Yes.
This is somebody who's afraid of the blue skies. And that's an incredible show. Yes, indeed. You guys also got me to watch Broadchurch, which is another that I didn't even know existed. So thank you for all of those. I shall continue to listen and enjoy keep informing us of the good and bad that comes across the television. That's all just a nice little note from Aaron.
That is a really nice note, Aaron. That's really sweet. We should use that for when we brag about our demos. Mm-hmm. Look at this very smart person who was turned around to watch more quality television.
That's right.
That's like, it's good for us.
That's
a win-win. Thanks, Aaron. That was
strong,
awesome.
Strong demos. Brady from the 801.
Okay. This is Tom Brady?
No, this is Salt Lake City, so in the Utah area. Just a quick one. Am I the only one who finds that multicam sitcoms are antiquated and have no place in modern TV? I know the masses seem to attach themselves to whatever schlock Chuck Lorre decides to throw out there. Ooh, burn. But I feel we as a society should have grown past this by now, and it drives me crazy that we keep seeing stuff like Mulaney and Mr. Robinson destroying actors and comedians that I love. Thoughts?
You don't need to sell me on that. I mean, no swaying needed. I don't get it. I don't get multicams. I know that there are people who've written whole books about the beauty of multicams, and there are people who, to this day, that's like their calling card on the internet, supporting multicams. And I don't get it. I think that whole fakeness to it. I'm just too hyper aware. It's like, I don't know, maybe it's a new form of meta. Like, I'm aware that I'm watching this thing where I shouldn't be aware that it's a situation and that there's going to be an act break in a joke punchline commercial.
Well, it's so theatrical, right? Because that's what it is. It's a stage production, essentially.
I mean, people like that. Maybe they feel comfortable with it, but I would think that generations raised on single camera stuff, which is, I think, much more funny. And I don't want a laugh track, honestly. It just drives me insane when I hear a laugh track. So I want single camera. I want a POV that's like a movie.
All right. So we're with you, Brady.
Yes. We're with you, Brady.
Jackson in the 780, which is one of that's one of our Alberta friends, our Edmonton.
Oh, I like that. Buddies. That's a good area code.
780 number. Is pretty, yeah, pretty
780.
Good.
780. Living in the 780.
Mm-hmm. Hi, guys. You spoke a bit about the challenges that Trevor Noah will be facing with his new show, but I think you missed the big one. I think you didn't miss it, but that's just a spoiler. He says, he isn't Jon Stewart. He may be funnier. He may come as much as an authority, but he's not Jon. I can only speak for myself, but I've been watching Jon for over a decade because I put in the time early to see what he was about and decided he was worth the time. Now that with viewing time being much more competitive, I don't think Trevor is going to get the same chance. I won't continue watching The Daily Show because Jon was the biggest reason I made time for it. Hopefully Trevor finds success, but I think it's a huge uphill battle. I mean, I think you kind of touched on this as one of the challenges is the continuity is not going to be particularly strong here. He's got to establish himself again with a new audience because the people who came to see Jon Stewart aren't going to just keep watching because it's called The Daily Show. He's going to have to reestablish himself, and it's a tougher market now, right?
Oh, definitely. I'm just going to make a stab. I think this might be a podcast, not print or online story situation. I think maybe he didn't read the column and then just.
Yeah,
heard
Jackson,
us talking about it.
You should check it out because Tim's column is pretty clear about like all the reasons, and this is one of them. He's not Jon Stewart. You know that's a huge thing. Even if he's good, because people are gonna have to resample.
Yeah, I think we should link to that maybe in the show notes because I think once he sees it, he'll see that we agree with him and vice versa, and it is complex on a number of different levels about why they won't tune in or will tune in and for how long will they tune in because it's not a black and white like oh I won't watch or I will watch. There will be some sampling, but I think you know we won't know for 6 or 8 months after he starts. But I think that it's going to be it's his audience. Not to beat this over the head again, but I think his is as a nonlinear audience. It's not no Nielsen measurement, so it'll take a hit.
Another Daily Show. This is from Ryan in the 215. It's Philly.
Yes, Philly.
While I was watching the final Daily Show, I was really moved by the video in the second segment that showed the huge numbers of folks involved in the show. I knew making shows like this was involved more than just a few people, but the number of people we met during that video was surprising. There's probably no blanket answer to this, but what happens to all those people when there's a change in a show like this, particularly when there's a transition to a new host? Will they be kept on by Noah? Is it even his call? A lot of jobs and careers are changed when Jon Stewart hangs it up, and I feel like what happens with these folks isn't often talked about. Cheery question.
Yeah, downer. Way to bring us down. Of course, it's Philadelphia, right?
Yeah.
Negative.
He also threw a battery at us.
Yeah, way to go. Way to boost Santa.
I actually know because I mentioned this on the last show because I listened to the podcast with a couple of the guys who are writers on The Daily Show. I know a little bit about this. So Colbert took his staff with him to CBS.
Yeah, the entirety of it.
Letterman took his staff when he went from NBC to CBS. With Letterman leaving, that they all are done.
They're
all out of work now. My understanding with The Daily Show is that there is production continuity. A lot of the producers and writers and technical staff are just staying on, just as they did when Craig Kilborn left and Jon Stewart came in. There's some turnover, but it's not like they shut down the show and are bringing up another show, partly because Jon Stewart's not going anywhere, so he's got nobody to take with him. Larry Wilmore had to assemble a new staff. John Oliver had to assemble a new staff, but there's continuity in this case for Trevor Noah. And like I said, I think Jon Stewart may actually still technically be involved as a producer on some level. I think there was a goal to provide like extra continuity for Trevor Noah when he starts at the end of September.
Yes, that's textbook. Well said, Jason. That's textbook about how everything happened and how it does happen. And in this case, like you said, a lot of people are staying on. And I would just say that this is not always the case, though, because a lot of times when new hosts come in, they do turn over. Like when Leno left, pretty much all of Leno's people were out of work because, you know, Fallon and those guys, just they had new people that they brought with them. Right, Fallon's
people
came down.
Fallon's in New York, too, so they couldn't even keep like the camera operators and the technical staff because they're not in the same location.
So a lot of jobs do get lost in these transitions, but just even going back to his first part, I think that it would be kind of fascinating for like the general public to sort of get a chance to see, because he was right. It was a great video as it went around and it, you know, they had written it and timed it and it was a wink towards Goodfellas and Scorsese and, you know, this whole thing where you're narrating it and all these people, and it does seem like a lot of people, and clearly it did to him, but you'd be surprised that that's a small show. you know, you go to a bigger show and you start thinking, wow, this is what a network television show employs this many people. It's kind of stunning. I mean, it's not like a movie where, like, when they do a Pixar movie and there's like a bajillion people who are just painting eyeballs and stuff, and then there's another bajillion who do arms and stuff or whatever. I just can't imagine that so many people are in work at Pixar. But on these shows, there's so many people. For example, in stuff that we know, but you get told it again, and it becomes kind of surprising. Like when they were talking about a building. There's a show coming up in network in the fall where they literally built a hospital on the set, and it's not like a small place. It's not like, oh, we get the front of it, and then here's the ER room. They built like a 40,000 square foot building on a set. It was the second biggest set in Hollywood, I guess. And they said, oh, let's have this. Let's build this, you know, working elevators and everything. And right now, I gotta say, I didn't get a chance to see it, but the American Horror Story Hotel, the next one that's coming up, apparently the work done on that actual hotel, which also has a working elevator in it, apparently that is like a thing of beauty. Like I know people who are jaded like me are like, you know what, I want to see that set, because everybody who even comes close to it wants to steal stuff from it, and they don't want it torn down. People are saying, hey, when this season ends, please don't tear this down. Maybe we can make this part of the lot. Wow. So sometimes sets are amazing, but just to back up, how many people put that together? How many writers are there, et cetera? These shows employ a lot of workers.
Yeah, it's amazing. I always wondered about how The Daily Show did their all their news clips and stuff like that. And it turns out there's an entire department separate from the writers, separate from the segment producers who do the field pieces. That is the group. I forget their name. They have a weird technical sounding name that is not at all what they do. They're the ones who are looking at and logging and pulling out stuff from all of the news services, like separate from the writing staff.
Right.
And I had no idea, but you know, so you've got a writer's room and you've got a segment producing group. And then you've got this other group that's like, yeah, and that's a half hour, 4 days a week, basic cable TV show.
I know.
So it's right? amazing.
And how much time they put in. I mean, I think those guys were in that video and with the bleeding eyes. That was pretty funny. There was a thing about them, their eyes were all bloody. Yeah.
Anyway, oh yeah, and the other thing is that, like, a lot of times there's crossover where when there's a ripple, like, it all, you know, you get like one of the guys who'd been on The Daily Show for ages went to be the exec producer for John Oliver, so you know there's some of that kind of spins around too. So you know you're right, sometimes people lose their jobs, and like Letterman's people, let's say you worked long and hard and you became like a Letterman staffer, and then 6 weeks later he announced he was retiring. It's like, well, congratulations, you got a great item on your resume, but you know you're out of a job the day that Dave goes off the air. That's just how it is.
So, oh, that is hard. Yeah,
yeah,
that's tough.
I think that's you send a note to Stephen Colbert and say, I know where all the switches are in the Ed Sullivan Theater. Okay, we had two more. Noah in the 562. That's Long Beach.
Oh, the LBC.
Yeah. And he says,
a rap knowledge there.
He says, you probably heard David Simon has two new series coming to HBO. One's a 1970s porn drama starring James Franco playing twins.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one, no title yet, the modern day examination of partisanship and the influence of money on national governance. I'm excited for both. The Wire, in my opinion, is the greatest show ever made. Unfortunately, they won't be starting production until later this year, so I'll just stick with the 6-part miniseries Show Me a Hero, which I'm eager to see. What are y'all's thoughts on this new HBO show news? That's Noah, Black Man with a Plan from Long Beach. What do you think?
Nice. I think it's great. I think anytime you get David Simon employed in something, it's great. Mm-hmm. It's going to work. The next thing is like, oh my God, more shows. You know, that's the,
right. Yay. David Simon's making more shows. That's awesome.
Times of confusion.
No, we must watch more shows. Yeah.
Yes. Times of confusion.
Confusion.
I think that's great. I love him. I love the fact that he just like makes things very complicated and doesn't make it easy for people and does a lot of stuff that, you know, when you're watching Show Me a Hero, which I think is fantastic. You know, there is that element of eating your vegetables. It's like city council, city council story. Like no one else would say, yeah, hey, David, why don't you do something on a city council meetings? That would be awesome. No one does that. So I was getting into the porn world and other things that I think that's exciting. I just love that guy should be employed. You know, he should still do it. In fact, just separate story entirely. You know, Tom Fontana and Barry Levinson are doing a series for National Geographic about the last people out of the fall of Saigon. Huh. And then you're like, wow, yeah, those guys should be doing a lot more TV. They've done some of the greatest TV. And it just tells you can make stuff anywhere because it's going to be a National Geographic scripted drama that's in its own time element. Right. It's amazing.
Times of confusion.
Yeah.
The Nat Geo scripted.
Too much TV.
Okay, we got our last letter. This is becoming a tradition. It's from our friend AB in the 415. Now, I have some special things to say, which is that I saw Amy in the 415 this morning. She came by the house, dropped up some of those treats that she advertised in a previous episode of the TV, TM. I had a little coffee cake, very tasty. So it's very funny. She went to the high school that my daughter has started at today. So
oh, that's nice. Crazy. And she also, not to interrupt your story, she sent me foodstuffs, I should say, to the hotel room.
Did you get them?
I did.
Oh yeah, she was worried that you didn't get them, that the hotel didn't deliver them. Send them to the room.
Oh, it was very funny because I was not there, or I had the do not disturb sign up. So, you know, it became like, oh, one of the many things that didn't get delivered. And I would say, oh, okay. And then like, oh, I think we actually have a package for you. And then I found them like 2 or 3 days after she sent them. So they were there.
All right. Little treats to the hotel. Mm-hmm. All right. So Amy writes, with summer at its peak, spending my days at the surf at Stinson Beach, thought it was time to lighten up in the poetry department and take a stab at a limerick. Struggling to find new shows into the fall season, I've been pleased that Ray Donovan recovered from a few bad episodes at the start of the second season. It's back to being one badass cool dude, though I can't understand why the ex Mrs. Tom Cruise, Katie Holmes, has braces and tries to snog and pash with all the blokes. They don't mind the metal. And finally, who cannot truly love the dysfunction of Mr. Robot? Oh, and it's more and more random journey to uncharted TV territory. Since both Ray and Elliot have been boozing and binging on drugs heavily, and the fact they do not seem to eat ever, I have come up with a nice rehab juice cleanse smoothie. That recipe will be in the show notes to make them feel a little bit better during their destructive paths. And here's the limerick for Ray Donovan and Mr. Robot. Eagerly waiting for the new fresh pilots of the fall season to begin, betting on some creative and brilliant episodes to let us truly sin, biding my time, Ray Donovan drinks lots of whiskey, and the bloke Elliot from Mr. Robot is very risky. So come on, cable, network, and streaming guys, deliver us a cleaver win. That is our Amy limerick.
Wow.
It's a long limerick.
It is limerick, and it wasn't naughty.
It's like a double limerick there.
It wasn't like a not naughty one.
It was a little bit.
I was thinking maybe we're going to have to put the little, well, I already swore.
You already did. You take care of that. I just let it go by, but you know, you drop one in every time.
Okay.
So anyway, thank you, Amy, and thank you for the treats from both of us. And and I'll put the smoothie in the... If Mr. Robot is listening, or Ray Donovan, check out the show notes.
I may need that myself. Post TCA, I should.
You may need a Death March cleanse smoothie. Yeah,
definitely do. Or as my friend said, I was like, you know, it's like a rehab or 3 or 4 months of like drying out. And he's like, why? That was the response.
Fair enough.
He said, why? You're going to be back here in 6 months anyway.
I feel like TCA is almost like going to rehab, though. We're going to lock you in a hotel. You can't leave. We'll have sessions during the day where you'll get out your feelings. And then at night, yeah.
Except for the drinking,
yeah. TV rehab.
Yes.
All right. Well, Tim, it's been a pleasure as always. We'll be back next week. I think maybe even back on our regular day. But, you know, whenever we record and release it, it'll be simultaneously across the internet to everyone out there. So thanks. Send in your comments because we got a lot of them in today, so we need more. You can tweet us at TVTM. Tim's at Bastard Machine. I am at Jay Snell. You can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/TV Talk Machine. And you can email us podcast@TVTalkMachine.com. Until next time, Tim, it's been a pleasure as always.
Jason, thank you for rallying me and rallying the troops and getting everything set up for this. We continue our journey and we continue our numerical march towards 1 year.
Yes. Yes. We're getting closer. We'll see everybody next week.
Hello, I'm Anthony Johnston, the host of Unjustly Maligned here on the Incomparable Network, and I've already burned through 15 seconds of the oh-so-precious minute I've been given to tell you about the show. It's all about the sometimes strange things we love that other people, well, don't. Some of the guests defending their tastes in pop culture include Will Wheaton.
The original Tron.
Lee Alexander.
the Twilight universe.
Merlin Mann.
The 2009 movie Watchmen.
Casey Liss.
The Dave Matthews Band.
Erica Ensign.
Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace.
And of course, it wouldn't be an incomparable show without Jason Snell himself poking his nose in.
Stargate SG-1, the science fiction TV series.
Plus many, many more. Unjustly Maligned is the show for people who go against the grain. Every Monday, here on The Incomparable. Go to ump.fm to subscribe, and remember, there's no such thing as a guilty pleasure. Wow, 3 seconds left. Nail.
Hi, Erica.
Hi, Steven.
What are we doing here?
Well, we are talking about a Doctor Who podcast that we do together called Lazy Doctor Who.
Oh, really? What's that about?
It's where you and I watch Doctor Who from the very first episode, made in 1963, up to the present day, and then we talk about it on the podcast.
What, over 800 episodes of Doctor Who, from William Hartnell to Peter Capaldi, all in one sitting?
No, silly. We talk about each episode as we watch them. Or maybe we talk about a couple episodes per podcast, or however many we feel like watching in a particular night.
How on earth are we going to fit all of these podcasts in?
Well, that is the beauty of it. We record a podcast whenever we get around to it, and for however long we want to talk for. We're lazy like that.
So, it's a Doctor Who podcast where the hosts are kind of lazy, so...
Yep, Lazy Doctor Who. Find it on the Incomparable Network, on iTunes, or at lazydoctorwho.com.
Thanks for explaining that. I was feeling...
Lazy?
Yeah.